Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially since you're always growing and changing. Therapy is all about deepening that self-awareness, because sometimes you don't know what you really want until you talk things through. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Visit betterhelp.com/positive today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/positive.
Kevin Matt talks with Matt Hardy.
There's nothing like a wrestling fan, you know, for better or for worse. How do you handle that, though? We're talking about people talking about your family, what they don't know about your family or your brother or you. How does one handle that from a day-to-day basis?
Something I joke about with the Young Bucks all the time. I said, if you would vanity search Matt Hardy on Twitter, I said, after you got through 100 replies, you'd want to quit the business and never be seen again. It's just, you just learn to deal with it. You know what I mean?
It's the Kick Rocks Wrestling Podcast with Evan T. Mack. Subscribe now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I keep going back and forth, mostly because I know some of you are interested in what happened in the darkness retreat with Aaron Rodgers and his commode. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, called it a commode. It was never a toilet or a potty. It was the commode. That word when I was a kid made me laugh so hard, and she would get so mad at me because I laughed so hard every time she said it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. I'm not sure I want to be like every other show and encourage conversations about commodes, but it's not just about the commode. Because not that long ago, I told you about a situation I had with a commode in my house and how I had a flood and it was awful. And But this is different. Rodgers takes it to another level, and it's TMI. I'm telling you, if I play it for you, you may be mad that I played it for you, and you may dislike him even more. Just tell me this, Producer Jay, why? Why? If you're Aaron Rodgers, just for a second, try to put yourself in that space. I know it's relatively impossible. You have nothing in common. Why would he ever talk about that?
I guess it was a question on people's minds.
So what? Entering. Do you have to answer it?
No, you don't. And especially based on the way he answered it, he sounds like he almost couldn't wait to answer it, I would say. Like, he definitely went out. He thought about the whole time what he was going to say when that question came up. He knew it was going to come up. And I feel like that answer was a little premeditated. He really got into it.
Well, here's the second question. Why did you give it to me on my cut sheet?
I had to.
Did you think I was going to play it?
I wasn't sure, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't give it to you. You had to.
Oh, okay. I mean, I didn't hear any other cuts about, I don't know, taking a bath, or I didn't hear cuts about eating in the darkness. I didn't hear cuts about how much he slept or how much he had to get acclimated to the light again. No, you put pooping on my audio cut sheet.
I don't know if they got into the other stuff. I think a lot of it was, questions was asked and.
Okay, I would be willing to bet they did talk about the other things in an hour and 41-minute podcast. You just don't feel the need to pass that information along to me.
I mean, I don't really. His eyes, how they adjusted, it's at least this one, like, packed a punch.
I'm taking back the birthday gifts I gave you. That's what's happening here. That's ew. This is what happens when I work with men. Ew. It's TMI. Isn't there such a thing as too much information, even if you're male? Isn't there such a thing as too much information and not wanting to know about him going to the bathroom in the dark?
Yes, there is. I think, I don't know, that there was a shorter version of the cut I had found first, and then I found that extended a little bit longer one. So I went with the longer one.
Thank you.
And the end of that one maybe is where it gets, like, way too much. It's just, like, over-the-top detailed. We don't need that. But I don't know. I can't say I, at the time, wasn't curious, but I didn't really need to hear it. It was more just one of those, like, oh, yeah, I wonder, that would be weird. But he really answered it. Yeah.
Okay, come on. I feel like every single American at some point, whether your power's out, whether it's because of a storm and you don't have power, or whether you are waking up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom and you don't turn on lights, either A, because it'll blind you, or B, because there's other people around, and you go to the bathroom in the dark. Why is that so fascinating?
Well, because you got moon at that point. You got the moonlight.
Not necessarily if your bathroom's internal. Or interior, sorry.
I guess if you're in like a basement or something where there's no light getting through. I
mean, have you never in your life, you've never gone camping, you've never ever gone to the bathroom in the dark?
I think it was more just that he had to live in, like his bathroom was his main room. So if he were to miss or if he were to get it every, you know, it's kind of, then you gotta, then what?
Okay, so never mind. That seals it for me. We're not playing the cut. No, this is no, absolutely not. I can't, thank God my vacation starts in a couple hours because I need to get away from this and that grin on your face as fast as I possibly can. Ew, I've been doing radio for 25 years and I've never once considered sharing that information, ever. And you know me, I'm an open book.
Has it been asked? They asked him, what's he going to do? I don't think he's
say lied. That's too much information. But as you point out, he's very proud of himself.
Couldn't wait to say that, his response.
In fact, I would be pretty confident that was a predetermined question. That
definitely.
Aubrey Marcus had no choice but to ask the question.
Definitely. I'm telling you, he was in that darkness retreat and he thought of that answer. Like, he knew exactly what he was going to say just based on that clip.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Jay set me up. He did it on purpose. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and I suppose you can register your complaint if you believe I'm not doing my job by not letting you hear what Rogers had to say about going to the bathroom in the darkness. I'm just telling you, you can't unhear it. Once you hear it, and ew, no, no. The only people I have this conversation with ever are family members, and that's really close family members. Why in the, okay, I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to just let it, I'm going to breathe. I'm just going to breathe now. I'm offended. No, I'm not offended. I just, ew. I'd rather talk about pretty much anything else, like anything else besides that.
To eat.
I like to eat animals. That's the other part of that cut. Did you cut that off because
animals?
Jay, what are you doing in there? You're trying to screw me up. I know you are. Okay, so on Twitter, A-Law Radio, if you have a complaint for the suggestion box, or if you're with me and you do not need to hear all of this information from Aaron Rodgers, just can you please just either retire or go back to playing football because I can't take all this stuff. And then on our Facebook page too, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, thank you for your responses to the Darlene Santor interview, Coach Dar, her new book, The Art of Bouncing Back. It's very inspirational. I've got some links up there on Twitter. I'm glad you enjoyed it. She inspired me. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum. Okay, let's talk about any other quarterback, please.
Murray back to throw, and it is. Is it tossed? Oh my goodness, it's caught! DeAndre Hopkins caught it!
Back from under center, steps back, throws the fade.
Cooper Kupp's got it! Touchdown, LA!
Burrow back to throw, looking, firing deep for Chase in the end zone.
Oh,
he's got it!
Mahomes fires for the end zone, caught! Touchdown, Kansas City! And off to Eckler again. No, Herbert keeps it, end zone, touchdown! Chargers! Herbert with his second of the day.
Here's the snap. Josh going to keep it himself and run it again inside the five, into the end zone, touchdown Buffalo! Josh Allen, 9-yard touchdown run. The Bills respond and then some.
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
I recognize I'm in the minority. Once again, underscored in this sports radio business, I am usually about an army of one. Baltimore Ravens general manager Eric DaCosta gets very emotional when he talks about Lamar Jackson, as he talks about the prospect of losing him, or as he talks about the prospect of not coming to an agreement. He's really feeling it.
I've seen a lot of deals happen when things look bleak, or I haven't seen deals when I would have thought, oh, it's a slam dunk. It takes two people to do it. It takes communication, it takes respect, it takes appreciation for each other, and it takes an understanding of the greater good and how this thing is gonna fit together. So I remain positive. I have no reason not to remain positive. We've spoken recently. We've had good meetings recently. And so we'll see what happens.
He says, I'm not going to give up hope. I refuse to give up hope. So where there's hope, there's always the possibility that a trade... No, sorry. Whoops, that's a Freudian slip. That a deal will get done. Although a trade is definitely a possibility if they cannot come to an agreement. And the big challenge here is not just about finding common ground where both sides have to compromise. But the challenge is that if they exclusive tag him, meaning the franchise tag that's the exclusive, they will have to pay him $45 million should they not come to an agreement. Now, it gives it a little more time, but if they don't come to an agreement, it's $45 million, which is essentially the rest of what they have available under the salary cap. So you would have a really good quarterback for 1 year, no long-term deal, but probably no new wide receiver, no addition to your secondary, at least not quality. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. While we're talking QBs in the AFC North, Kenny Pickett will be going into year number two, and optimism is high with GM Omar Khan.
I'd say the future's bright. He's exciting to be around day in and day out. He's a great teammate. He's great in the building. He works extremely, extremely hard. He wants to be great. That's awesome to see. I mean, Kenny Pickett wants to be great.
I believe this was probably a joke, but someone reached out to me as part of Ask Amy Anything to say, will Pittsburgh ever get a good quarterback? So I actually did fall for the trap. I mentioned Ben Roethlisberger in his 18 years, and then, hey, you already have his replacement or your next franchise QB the very next season. Pittsburgh is well-run, it's in good hands, and Kenny Pickett showed a lot of signs. Great promise, as Omar Khan points out on SiriusXM NFL Radio.
He didn't urinate down his leg, man. That's a great
good
place to begin.
Good point. See what I mean? And then all the way through the season, he continued to get real-life reps. In the AFC North, the team to beat, though, is the Cincinnati Bengals, and that has a lot to do with their quarterback, Joe Burrow. General manager Duke Tobin at the Combine, Indianapolis. Is the contract extension done?
It's not done yet. You know, it's a good problem to have. You know, I have been pretty vocal about what Joe means to us, and my job is to facilitate his success as best I can with putting pieces around him, and his contract will get done when it gets done, but it's a good problem to have. He's a vital part of what we're doing.
Well, and he mentions pieces around Joe Burrow. One of those is T. Higgins. And for some reason, a lot of people are talking about how the Bengals could trade him, that he may not be in their future plans, and Tobin debunks that.
I'm in the business of making the Cincinnati Bengals better, and so trading T. Higgins is not on my mind. That's their problem. They want a receiver. Go find your own. You know, in my opinion, you know, T. Higgins is a good piece for the Cincinnati Bengals, so... The trade stuff is a little ridiculous right now.
Please save that as a drop. If you want a receiver, go find your own. I love that. He says he's a good piece for the Bengals, and all of that is a little ridiculous. Now, T is a third-year player going into the final year of his rookie deal, and it's not just Joe Burrow who is up for a contract extension. How about Ja'Marr Chase, who came in the year after him, along with T. Higgins? You're talking about guys that will need to get paid, or they will go somewhere else. But as Duke points out, it's a good problem to have. And yeah, it all starts with Joe Burrow and what a difference he's made to the franchise since he showed up on the scene.
He walked in like the Bengals superstar, you know, and not a lot of people, you know, have the confidence to do that and the wherewithal to know how to do it. You know, he came into our situation and he wanted to be in charge without being overbearing. And, you know, he's just got so much confidence in himself in the right way. It's rare that you can have a guy with that level of confidence and no arrogance.
Back-to-back AFC championship games, of course, the Super Bowl appearance. And, yes, they ran into the Chiefs. However, I still say they're on the way up in Cincinnati with the improvements they've made, the offensive line a lot better late in the season, the long winning streak. They, as long as they stay healthy, they are a force to be reckoned with, along with the Chiefs and the Bills and a few other teams there in the AFC. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, pivoting away from the North. We got a lot of quarterback questions elsewhere in the AFC. How about the Colts and general manager Chris Ballard? He's got a laundry list of what he's looking for in his next signal caller.
One that wins. No, I mean, look, you want a guy that's got a fast mind who's accurate. Like, we get caught up in arm strength, but guys that is accurate and then who makes plays when the game's on the line. And I know I'm going to get this question, but, like, I think we're seeing today, they come in all different shapes and sizes. I mean, you look around the league, and I think you can track this back to 7-on-7 back in high schools 20, 25 years ago when they started, that more kids that, you know, you're getting a lot more athletes playing the position. So they're going to come in different shapes, different sizes, some tall, some short, some athletes. The ability to move, navigate the pocket, escape from the pocket, create plays with your feet. I mean, all those are things that we're seeing in our league. Not that we haven't seen them before, but I think it's even become more prevalent.
So that's all. That's what he's looking for in a quarterback, one who wins. Certainly the Colts have been stuck in what's a spiral around their quarterback decisions. There's a lot of talk that they could move up or attempt to move up to that number one spot to draft Bryce Young. But that pick belongs to the Bears, and the Bears know they could get a bidding war out of this. A few teams that desperately want to move up, the Houston Texans are another one in that same division, right? The AFC South. And then in the South, you've got the Tennessee Titans. Certainly seemed like a year ago at this time, even before they drafted Malik Willis, but Ryan Tannehill's days were numbered in Tennessee, and according to their GM, Rand Carthon, that's not the case.
Ryan's done a great job. Ryan's won a lot of football games, as you guys know. So he's under contract. I'm excited about moving forward with him. And, you know, I know everybody wants to make a big deal, you know, out of the quarterback position and whether he will or won't be here. But you guys just have to accept the fact that Ryan is under contract, you know, for us. And right now he's a Titan and he will be a Titan.
Part of the reason that Carthon is so sure is because Malik Willis didn't look good as a rookie. He struggled as a rookie. And it doesn't mean he won't be a strong quarterback moving forward. It just means he's not ready. So that then precipitates the need for Ryan Tannehill to be there and to be healthy and to be their starting quarterback. So Carthon, he squashes any idea that Tannehill is going to be released or that they're going to have a different quarterback next season. But they do obviously still need to get Malik Willis ready.
The one thing that I talked to Malik about was just continue to grow as a quarterback. And that's not just throwing the ball. That's not, you know, all these different things. But quarterback is so much more mental than it is physical. And I think, you know, from that standpoint, I just, you know, taught him about being able to lead the locker room, being able to have that presence and continuing just to, you know, reach out to some of the greats in our game and guys that are helping him. So we've been able to connect, and he's reached out to, you know, other quarterbacks in the league to kind of serve as mentors for him, which kind of shows, you know, who he is as a person and where he sees himself and where he wants to go.
Rand Carthon, the Tennessee Titans general manager. Again, Malik Willis having a better rookie season probably means they part ways with Tannehill because he's got a large cap hit. It's nearly $37 million, and they don't have that much cap space. Remember, they already released a couple of veterans to make room under the cap. But if they don't have another viable option, they're going to have to keep Tannehill and pay the money. One more, and this comes from the AFC East, where we haven't seen Tua for months. We've heard from him a little bit. He expressed his appreciation for the Dolphins and the medical staff, the coaches allowing him the time and the space to heal. But he's also up for a contract extension. Here's head coach Mike McDaniel.
You know, like any other player, you factor in every variable. You know, I think, you know, one thing that you know, when you're talking about those types of decisions, I think it's important to recognize that we have a congruence of interest by the Dolphins and the player.
Love that word.
Tua, that both parties really want him to play at a very high level for a long time for the Miami Dolphins. So what's the best way to really engineer that or to help manifest that? Well, those are the things that we're kind of weighing in terms of the various options with, you know, the same desired end as Tua would like.
Mike McDaniel at the Scouting Combine. He and GM Chris Greer are still deciding whether or not they will pick up the option for Tua's fifth year. This is the fifth year on his rookie deal. They've got until May 1st. Yes, durability is a major factor in that. He's got an option for a $23.2 million salary in 2024, but you need him to be on the field. We've seen how well the Dolphins' offense can operate if Tua's on the field. And I don't think concussions are necessarily a sign of being injury prone. In fact, I hate it when people kind of put those things together. But if you have multiple concussions, especially over the course of a season, then you can, according to the science, you can be more prone to them and they can get progressively worse. So it is a concern, though not necessarily about being injury prone. All right, that's your AFC version of QB News. So an Aaron Rodgers free zone for a couple of minutes anyway. Straight ahead, a chance for you to hear part of my conversation with Jason Stark, the great baseball insider and reporter at spring training. Wonderful intel. And I mean, I'll just say it. A lot of fun in talking about the rules changes for baseball. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Three balls, two strikes, two out, three on, 6-6 in the ninth. And did he go to his mouth or he took
Whoa.
To Oh, he didn't get out. He got out of the box and the game is over.
Oh, my goodness.
He wasn't ready to hit by the pitch clock and he's called out.
Oh, my.
And we think the game is over. The ninth inning's over anyway and it's tied at six. Wow.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
As we head through this first week of spring training in Major League Baseball, you hear that call, which really set off a big firestorm from spring. But umpires are very aggressive in enforcing the pitch clock and these new timing rules, though a lot of people still don't exactly understand what's happening. But Cleveland shortstop Jose Tania was called out for not engaging the pitcher until there were fewer than 8 seconds left on the clock. And so you've got a bunch of guys who are trying to figure it out on the fly, and fans who are doing the same. Thus, our conversation with longtime senior writer and insider Jason Stark, now with The Athletic. Many of you have accessed this conversation if you didn't hear it live on our last show. It's available on the podcast, but we wanted to bring back a portion of it because it was entertaining. And he swears to me that this is what baseball wants.
Here's the thinking, Amy. If this happens to you once, there's no chance it'll happen to you twice.
Ooh.
So does that work for you, that logic?
Well, if it happens in that particular situation, yes. But at the same time, and I saw this on your Twitter as well, it's not like he's the only guy who got called for a strike. It just happened to be in an extreme situation like that one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, in this particular game, there were three violations, and two of them were first pitch of the at-bat. Hitter didn't get in the box on time. This is a lot like Manny Machado in that Padres game last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Hitter didn't get in the box on time, so it's 0-1 before they've even gotten into the box. And then I noticed that as the game wore on, they learned from that, and hitters were calling time before they ever got set before the first pitch. Because it's really bizarre when nobody's thrown a pitch, but the count's 0-1.
That is weird. Goodness.
I mean, think about what happened to end the game. A guy recorded a strikeout on a 3-2 pitch that he never actually threw.
For those people who love to score baseball games, I don't even know how you score that.
Like, we don't know how to score that. That has never happened. And, you know, my friend Scott Fransky, who does the Phillies games, he texted me like a little drawing he did of a backwards K upside down, like taking a nap, because we've had strikeouts looking. This was strikeout not looking.
Not paying any attention, as a matter of fact.
Right. It's something to see. Like, everybody's working their way through it. But The good news is the games have really moved along. They're 22 minutes shorter on average than the games last year this time. Last year, the average game in spring training took more than 3 hours. This year, going into today, we only had 6 games in the whole sport that took over 3 hours in spring training now. And they're all wild games with a ton of runs, and the longest of those games was 3 hours, 6 minutes. So this is going to have an impact on the rhythm of games, the time of games, and when the games are over. And all the time that's coming out of these games is dead time. When we get to the other side of this, I'm going to find it really hard to look at it and think anything about this is negative, unless you're just one of those people who thinks nothing in baseball should ever change.
There's lots of rule changes, actually. Is this the most drastic, or are we in store for some other drama as some of these other rules changes play out?
Well, the pitch clock, I think, is requiring the most immediate adjustment. But, you know, along with the pitch clock comes some rules that are going to have a big impact on base running, base stealing in the game. The fact that there's a 2 pickoff limit is a gigantic difference. Hmm. And I've already seen this with my own eyes. There was a game the other day where Richard Bleier called for 3 balks in 1 inning, balked Jeff McNeil around the bases. So there's a runner on first, and he made a pickoff move to first base. It's the first one I've seen all spring. And what happened next pitch? Runner took off. And I was talking to him about it afterwards, and, you know, like, well, everybody thought that when there are 2 pickoffs and the pitcher can't throw to first anymore unless he gets the guy out, that's when runners would be more aggressive. But that's not how the Braves played it in this game. When they thought they had an opportunity to run, they just took off. They didn't look back. They didn't dance. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. I don't think that you're going to see anybody steal 100 bases like Ricky Henderson, but I think you're going to see a ton of guys steal 20 and 30 and 40. And that's, you know, we had one player in the whole sport steal 40 bases last year, and it's John Birdie. That's a good trivia question next time you're at the tavern. This year, I mean, there's no way 40 leads the league. 50, 60, maybe 70 will lead the league. And look, you have a lot of great athletes in the game. This is a combination of rules that is going to encourage great athletes to do their great athlete thing. And again, I'm all for that.
So, Jason, you're there. You're talking to managers and players. Are they in the same mindset as you, where they think this will make the game more entertaining, where they eventually will enjoy the changes?
You know, everybody's trying to figure out what they need to do to get through this. One of the big topics with the stolen base stuff that we're just talking about is, okay, it's going to promote the running game. If you're on defense, how do you control the running game? And I've seen more teams working on pitch outs this spring than I have in a long time.
Wow.
Brian Snicker from the Braves was telling me he only called 6 pitch outs all last year, and a bunch of their minor league affiliates didn't call any, to the point where they had some catchers in camp who had never called, caught, or thrown a pickoff before in their life. That's how much the game has changed, and now it has to adjust back. You're seeing a lot of, because the pitcher can't throw over to first more than twice, I'm seeing catchers after the pitch throwing behind the runner, throwing over to first. You saw Max Scherzer yesterday, nobody on base. He was just ripping through the inning at Usain Bolt pace. And then as soon as somebody got on base, you saw him get into the set as soon as he could and then hold the ball until there was a fraction of a second left on the clock to mess with the hitter and the runner. So it's such a cool new world in this sport to see guys like Max Scherzer trying to lean into these rules and how they can make these rules work for them. And managers are trying to figure it out. Front offices are brainstorming how they're going to do the stuff that they do. Not everybody wants to reveal their hands in spring training. So this is going to be stuff that's going to create intrigue right into the season, as we see how teams are going to play this, and at least there's a whole new level of strategy for all of these rules. Hey, Amy, we haven't even talked about the shift yet.
Oh, we did talk about the shift, though. That was actually my favorite part. Jason read my mind as we were going through some of the various rules and the way the pitch clock is being digested in spring training. That's his number one job, is to calculate, to write about, to figure out how this is going to impact the game moving forward. But if you missed that conversation with Jay, then definitely check it out, because we talk shift and then we talk about the Padres going for broke. And maybe that will be literally. No. And then also Shohei Ohtani, yet another year of Shohei Ohtani. Will he or won't he? So it's on our podcast, but I shared the link. In fact, Jason retweeted the link, which was awesome. Whether you're a diehard or a critic, you definitely want to hear that whole conversation with Jason, going back to that wacky Braves Red Sox ending that started this firestorm last Saturday. So on Twitter, A Law Radio, on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Don't have to look far. The link is to the top of those social media sites and our individual pages. Glad to have you with us. Coming up next, the Alabama men's basketball team battles into overtime. Less about Brandon Miller right now than it was last week, though Nate Oates, the head coach, is still talking about a situation in a pregame ceremony that offended people, definitely was a cause for raised eyebrows. And if you're talking about coaches, well, Bruce Pearl, you know, sometimes he loses his mind. So there's that.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Green in the lane. Stopping, shooting, missing. Rebound tipped out. Scramble. Quinterly's got it. Quinterly weaving through traffic. Looks left side. Sears. Three. Bottom. Bama by five. 4:20 to go in OT. And a wonderful start for Alabama. Miller looking left side on the drive. Stops. Cleaner. No. Rebounded his own miss. Put back. Yes. What effort from Brandon Miller. Stayed with it after the miss. Put it back in. And Bama leads again by five with 3:33 to go.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Congratulations to Nate Oates and the Alabama Crimson Tide for their regular season championship in the SEC. And it comes with a flair for the dramatic in T-Town, in Tuscaloosa. A 90-85 overtime victory against arch rival Auburn. This is the Iron Bowl in basketball form. And it was a great game, a great finish, really. The Tide found another gear because they were trailing at home by 17 points with about 10 minutes to play in this one. And so this is history for Bama, the largest comeback going back. I think what I read was the 10-11 season, so going back 13 years at least, 12 years at least, and their first overtime win against rival Auburn since the 80s. So you had three different Auburn starters foul out, which obviously helps to springboard the comeback, to spark that comeback. You also had a couple of Alabama players that were ejected for leaving the bench. So this one got chippy and lippy. I mean, that's to be expected during a rivalry game, especially between these two schools. And ultimately, Bama was able to survive in OT. Bruce Pearl being interviewed minutes after the game. He's still very emotional as you hear. You know that the tempers are running high, but as you hear him, it's actually fairly shocking because he seems calm. He seems calm, and then boom.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! We were incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining us.
So I don't know if that was from the Auburn radio call, Okay, so Chris Stewart with Learfield for Alabama and the Crimson Tide with the play-by-play. And then it sounds like that was Bruce Pearl on the Auburn radio network doing a post-game interview. So we're literally talking about minutes after. He goes through the handshake line, likely sees his team head to the locker room. And if it's like it was when I worked for a basketball team, the Hartford Women, the head coach would talk to a few people and then would head right across the court and would put on a headset and would talk to us before she ever went to the locker room. And so, again, let's hear that from Bruce Pearl. It seems calm. It seems calm. And then 0 to 100 in the span of a nanosecond.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! We were incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
And you can hear him throw the headphones down. So Bruce Pearl, in the wake of that overtime loss and three of his players fouling out, he's hot, as you can understand. It's a 16-point run that brought Alabama back into this game. And again, congratulations to the Tide for winning the SEC championship in the regular season. But a painful loss for Bruce Pearl, and one that he's not going to take laying down. So he's known for being very emotional. I don't blame him. This is just some classic Bruce Pearl audio.
We played hard. It played well. You know, if that's the number one team in the country, you know, come on the road, hostile environment. You know, but we needed that one to get the NCAA, and we didn't get it. Dylan Cardwell's hurt. He's probably not going to play against Tennessee because of his injury. We need his physicality. He got fouled down there at the end of the game. So,
Coach, just talk about what Saturday represents now.
Oh, just we'll get ready to play Tennessee.
He goes from being so angry that he's yelling and maybe it was the other way around. Maybe that second cut that we played was earlier in the interview, because he's very emotional. Almost sounds like he's teary. Now, it could just have been the heat, the, you know, the emotion, the adrenaline, and so he takes a big sniff there. But he's very emotional. And then before the interview is done, he loses his mind over the fouls. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. As for Alabama, all that the Tide want to do is focus on basketball, especially after what happened last week. Now, I'm not sure if you know this. Players are still not speaking to the media. That includes Brandon Miller, in the wake of the revelations by the authorities in open court that he is the one who drove the gun to the site where former teammate Darius Miles provided it to a friend of his who ended up shooting and killing a young woman. And this was on the strip in Tuscaloosa going back a few weeks ago. Brandon Miller is still fully cleared and fully available. And as much as I would say the furor has died down nationally, there were a lot of people who were incensed, offended, at the very least were stunned to see what appeared to be a pat down in the pregame ceremony by a teammate of Miller's when he was introduced. And Nate Oates is still trying to explain what happened. He said he didn't know about it, but now he's taking responsibility.
That situation's on me. We addressed as a team. As soon as I brought it up to them, they immediately understood how it could be interpreted, and we all felt awful about it. They explained to me that it's like when TSA checks you before you get on a plane, and now Brandon's cleared for takeoff. We, as the adults in the room, should have been more sensitive to how it could have been interpreted, and I dropped the ball. That's it. I dropped the ball on it. We've addressed it. I can assure you it won't happen again.
So that is, once again, Coach Oates clarifying. It seems as though he's doing a lot of that lately and apologizing. And I know they're college kids. How in the world can you not see how that might be interpreted or how that might be construed? And maybe they have been doing it all year. That's what Coach indicated. But in the wake of everything that happened, if you're Brandon Miller, if I was Brandon Miller, I would myself still feel guilty over my role in this young woman losing her life because I'm the one that brought the gun to the scene. I'm the one that showed up, whether or not I knew the gun was there. And his attorney says Brandon had no idea the gun was in the car. The text message was sent to him while he was en route. I don't know many teenagers that don't check their text messages while they're driving. Either way, at some point, Brandon knew there was a gun in the car, and that's the one that was used to kill a 23-year-old mom. So if I'm Brandon, basketball maybe gives me a distraction, but I'm still racked with guilt and sadness over the role that I played in this woman's life. We've not heard from him. He's not been made available to the media for obvious reasons. Out there playing basketball, it's certainly a distraction. It's what he does well. But how on any planet does that type of a pat-down not look as though you're being frisked for a weapon? Tasteless at best and flat-out offensive at worst. And Nate Oates said he didn't see it, had no idea that it was going on. But yes, as the adults in the room, quote-unquote, that's definitely on him and his coaching staff to understand how that can be interpreted if the students and the players are not going to. The team is very good on the court. Number two in the country, probably a top seed in the upcoming NCAA tournament. But right now it's hard to watch them play without thinking about the young woman or thinking about their former player who's now indicted on first-degree murder charges. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.